Before we start this session, I would like to stand for a moment of silence in honor and to honor the memory of our dedicated friend and colleague and member of the ALA Executive Board, Dr. Gail Schlachter, who passed away on April 27, 2015. Thank you. Gail was a treasure to our profession and to the American Library Association, and the embodiment of warmth, kindness, and intelligence. Her gentle manner and her graciousness are an example for all of us. A memorial gathering will be held on Sunday, June 28th, from 5 to 7 p.m. in this convention center in Esplanade 304. I would also like to note the passing of ALA honorary member David Cohen, who died on February 5, 2015, at the age of 106. David Cohen was a co-founder of the ALA Ethnic and Multicultural Information Exchange Roundtable. Other memorials, tributes, and testimonials will be presented at this afternoon's ALA membership meeting, which is immediately following this session. At Council 3 on Tuesday, June 30th. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy A.4.2.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of Council. Any members of the Association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only. No action may be taken here. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at the annual conferences. It is my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today are Sari Feldman, ALA President-elect, Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council, Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance, and I would also like to introduce Danielle Alderson, our projectionist, and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist is Heather Theriak. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. You were given a ticket upon entering this meeting. It is for a drawing for two free registrations for the 2016 annual conference in Orlando, Florida. The drawing will take place at the end of the ALA membership meeting, which follows after this meeting session at 4:30. You must be present to win. Today's agenda, ALA Council Document Number 8.4 Revised, 6/25/15, 7:30 p.m. _INF, along with other Council documents are available on the Council section of ALA Connect and at the document pickup tables in this room. I am now pleased to present my President's Report, which is ALA Council Document Number 21.1. And I just want to make a couple of highlights for you from that report. As you'll note, the report gives you an update on my activities from the midwinter meeting until this point in the conference. The Career Development Facilitators Program will be concluding with a program here at this conference, and I encourage you to check the scheduler for that room, which I believe is in the West Building, room 2001, and that will take place tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. Also, another item I want to highlight from that report is that the ALA President's Program will take place tomorrow afternoon, and it will be preceded by the ALA Awards Program. So I encourage you to, once you come back in from seeing the parade, to come in and join us during the President's Program. Are there any questions regarding my report? Seeing that there are no questions, I will proceed to the next agenda item. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 29.1 and call upon ALA President-elect Sari Feldman to present her report. Sari. You're over there.
Thank you, Courtney. I want to call your attention in the report, in particular, to Congresswoman Fudge's congressional briefing that I was fortunate enough to facilitate in Washington. The Washington office helped to arrange it. The Congresswoman was particularly interested in how technology is affecting youth and how digital inclusion is occurring through libraries. And I facilitated a panel for her. She is the former chair of the Black Caucus of the U.S. Congress, and she was able to get the attention of many other offices of Congress, and we had a full house that day to hear the information. It was a great opportunity to really present on the library's role in technology. And that ties directly to what I have primarily been working on over the last few months, which is the presidential focus on the ALA public awareness campaign that will be launching on Tuesday, and that is the Libraries Transform campaign. And I look forward to having council be able to take a look at the website, which will be made available on Tuesday, and to share ideas and input as we move forward. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Ms. Feldman? Seeing that there are no questions, thank you. Sari. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23.1 and ask Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council, to present his report. Keith?
Thank you, Madam President. You have before you my report to the Council and Executive Board dated June 19th. These reports are issued on a regular basis, and the goal of these is to really try and capture the record of all of the many amazing things that are happening throughout the association at any particular time. I wanted to just touch on one item that's not covered directly in that written report, and that is the new ALA strategic directions and strategic plan. On Sunday, Council will be taking up for consideration and hopefully approval a new strategic plan for the association, which is called the strategic directions document. This document really builds on many long-standing pieces of the ALA planning environment, such as our mission, the key action areas that are approved by Council, and focuses on three areas as areas of strategic focus for the next 3 to 5 years, and those are advocacy, information policy, and professional leadership development. Our current strategic plan runs through this year, and we have really spent about a whole 2 years working on the plan that has gone to Council. We're also working very busily, and Mario will talk about this in his treasurer's report, to look at this framework and make sure that it drives association priorities going forward. The second thing I wanted to just briefly touch on, which is on page 2 of the report, our membership statistics, and I want to just offer a couple of observations. The membership at the end of May was 55,419, and last time, at the same time last year, it was 56,637. And as you're aware, because I'm sure you've been following this as well as I have, this continues what has been a decline since the beginning of the recession in the ALA membership. One of the things that I wanted to offer is some of our observations based on our analysis, and those really are reflected in the fact of what the actual library labor market, and in particular student enrollment, has been doing during the same period. Since the beginning of the recession, and the high year for MLIS student enrollment was 2010. Student enrollment has dropped by 26%, or about 5,000 students, from about 20,000 to 15,000. So part of a large portion of what we've seen in terms of a membership decrease has in fact been a decrease in the student membership category. And I do would point out that the actual percentage of library school students that are ALA members has actually risen by about 5% and now stands at about 52% as opposed to 47 going into the recession. So certainly we're continuing to work on, because we do believe that every MLIS student should be an ALA member. It's a very, very good investment in one's career and one's future. One of the things we've done is that we've been moving with chapters, and this last year 12 chapters joined into the joint chapter ALA membership program. So that brings the total number of chapters participating in that program to 38. So this has been a program that's been very, very successful, and we're continuing to look at how we can better meet the new needs of MLIS students. One of the other things that is on our horizon and in the very near horizon is that, as you know, many years ago, now I think eight, perhaps 9 years ago, ALA brought FELUSA, the Friends of Libraries USA nonprofit, into the association, where it became part of and part of the trustee division, forming a new division. This division has since prospered and has grown and has really, I think, become a much, much stronger force in terms of bringing citizen advocates into our work. 2 years ago, FELUSA, what is now United for Libraries, began to negotiate with states for the statewide group purchases. And since the beginning of the program, was able to enter into agreements with Kansas, Nebraska, North Dakota, and just this year with Texas, in which the state library agency contracts to basically purchase ALA and United for Library memberships for every trustee group and every Friends of Library group within the state. And I'm very happy to report that we just saw last week an announcement from United for Libraries that the state of Michigan will be coming in, bringing in another 400, 200 Friends groups and 200 trustee groups. On September 1st, these 2,500 Friends and trustee groups will become ALA members, and I will be happy to stand up at midwinter and report that membership has surged and that ALA is moving ahead. I think that the growth in organizational membership and the inclusion of these citizen groups in our advocacy community is something we've been working on a long time, and I want to really congratulate anyone who's active and involved in United for Libraries, because this has been really, really good work. So that's all I have to report.
Great. Are there any questions for our executive director? Microphone four.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Thank you, Keith, and thank you for the good things that you're doing to promote ALA membership. My question is related to that, and it's a concern that the participation of people who are members in our election process continues to be pretty poor. I think at the last election, less than a quarter of our members voted. I'm wondering what ideas and what issues there might be that either council or the executive board should be addressing to promote more vibrancy, more activity into the election process for ALA. It seems to me that it is great to get members that not only helps our bottom line, but makes for more importance to the organizational voice. But if we can't get our members to participate in our own governance, how can we engage them to participate in the broader governance issues that bring support for libraries? So I want to raise this. I probably will raise it again when we talk more about our strategic future, but it is of significant concern to me. Thank you.
I will at this point offer my opinion as a member of the association, and that is that I do think that we see many, many people involved in advocacy, just to address one of the points, Bernie, that you raised, are involved in advocacy that are not active in the election process. Clearly, I'd love to see both of those numbers increase. We're open to ideas because we haven't been able to come up with a solution that's really dramatically increased the participation. It's been relatively steady over the course of the decade that I've been here. It would be great if more people were involved. We're very much open to any ideas that people have. And I am looking forward to that. You have how many public libraries in New York? So those 1,000 new ALA members that will be coming in from New York State. So.
Microphone 3. Hi, Lauren Comito, Counselor at Large. You mentioned the combined student memberships for the chapters and ALA, and I realize that it's probably complicated to do that for the rest of us, but it makes it easier. Because when you have to join your chapter separately right. from the national organization, it means two giant credit card bills at separate times. It means having to make an effort twice. And what it means is that after the students join up for the chapters and for ALA, is that when they renew their ALA memberships, they drop their state chapter memberships because they frequently don't go sign up. So we see, I know at NYLA's seen a huge drop. After they graduate, they drop off. Or, you know, maybe they go to NYLA and drop ALA. Is there any way to figure out the technical complications of that to do a joint membership for everybody?
Right. We have looked at that. And one of the issues is there literally are 50 different membership schedules for each of the chapters. I am not in any way proposing that we attempt to standardize those. One of the issues with just the data processing that ALA deals with is that we really have a very complicated association, and we're proud of it because it accommodates so many people. But we had something like 1,700 pricing rules just for the existing ALA membership dues structure. And one of the things we've tried to do is make some alterations to reduce that. If we buy off-the-shelf software package and spend $100,000, we can absolutely count on having to spend another $100,000 customizing it to meet the needs of the association. And again, I'm not there's no criticism there, but that is the reality. So the whole issue of trying to figure out how to, because you want to do a single intake with a single user interface and have it work smoothly, the back end processing and data management on that is just at this point daunting. I think over time that opportunities may evolve, and we'll continue to pursue them. We know that the chapters would love to do that, and we know that it would be beneficial to all. We don't know a way to do it technologically that isn't prohibitively expensive.
Seeing no further questions, thank you, Keith. At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 33.1 and call upon Patricia A. Wan, Chair of BARC, to present her report. Good afternoon, Pat.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Courtney, for that good historic introduction. It's my privilege today to offer you the report of the Budget Analysis and Review Committee to the ALA Council, Executive Board, and members. This report also forms a report to the Budget and Planning Assembly, which meets on Sunday afternoon every conference, and this report will not be repeated for that assembly meeting tomorrow afternoon. So listen up if you're a member, and if you know members who are not here, please refer them to the PBA site where the report resides. My topics today are four: fiscal facts of ALA, the update on the current year budget, some recent activities of BART, and then some final remarks. I always like to remind councillors that ALA has a specific fiscal year. This year, fiscal year began September 1st, and it ends August 31st of 2015. And as every year goes, BARC, in its set of responsibility, oversees three separate fiscal year activities. It's active with the close of the past fiscal year, which was in this case FY14. We monitor the expenditures of FY15, the current fiscal year, and we advise the executive board on the allocations we recommend for the upcoming fiscal year, which in this case is fiscal 2016. And Mario, our treasurer, will be giving you a report on our plans for that. The budgeting process at ALA as an association is a little different than most of your libraries in one primary respect, and that is that from the beginning of the year, we don't necessarily have a pot of money to spend. Every year we spend money, but we also have to earn that money. And so we have to, in our budgeting process, make predictions about the revenues that we expect to come in the next year and the revenues and the expenditures that we will be expecting to make. I want to spend just a couple minutes today talking to you about the revenue sources that we, as we saw them in the last fiscal year. And the reason I'm using the last fiscal year 14 is because it gives us a picture of a whole 12 months of revenue that are actual revenues and not predicted. So you can see the nine categories around which we receive and earn revenues. The three largest are meetings and conferences, sale of books and materials, and dues. And those are closely followed by three more categories of revenue, namely advertising, grants and awards, and subscriptions. And it doesn't take much imagination from any of us to realize that all of those can vary rather dramatically at times, depending upon the circumstances of the year. This little pie chart gives you a nice visual to show you proportions of those revenue sources. Start at 12 o'clock noon, and you see the beginning of the largest source, which are meetings and conferences, and then go on around clockwise, and you get a full picture of one year's revenues. Now I want to focus on this current year, and the report that I'm able to give you now is a report of the year-to-date for the first 8 months of the fiscal year. And that it goes through April, the end of April. And in general forms, we've got some dollars here for you to think about, but generally, we are pleased ALA is tracking well on the fiscal 15 budget. We are overall in a healthy position. We have a small positive variance with excess revenue over expenses of about $85,000, and obviously that's not a very big portion of a 30.1 or so million dollar actual to date, but it is nice always to see the excess revenue over expenses, even in mid-year. Often, though, we don't come to that to really be able to make a full assessment of our budget, of course, until the end of the fiscal year. We're just now in June in our fourth quarter. I also want to point out that as of the end of April, we had a nice endowment fund. It had grown to almost $41 million, as opposed to a year ago. In April, it was at $37 million. So we're doing very well, thanks to the stock market and our wise investors. And we'll get an endowment report in a few minutes. In expenses, we continue to keep our belts tightened, even though we are pleased about the healthy budget that we are experiencing. We're still being very cautious about our expenditures. As you know, ALA watches its accounts, and we divide primarily the operating budget into five accounts: the general fund, the divisions, roundtables, grants and awards, and long-term investments. Just a quick look at the general fund. This is where we see the most variances between actual versus budget. Publishing is still in a transition, but is getting closer to meeting our budget expectations. And everything in general fund came in less than budget, but this kind of variance in mid-year is totally expected. In our divisions, we see a mix here. Divisions were over budget in revenues and less than budget in expenses, which leads to an excess revenue over expenses of nearly $229,000. And in roundtables, we saw a similar situation. Roundtables show mixed variances. Revenues were over budget a little and expenses were under budget, but again, this is a situation, mid-year a situation that is totally anticipated. I want to spend the next and the last few minutes of my time with you highlighting a few things that BARC has been involved with on your behalf. Besides tracking and budgeting and planning budgets, every year BARC addresses the resolutions and referrals from council. So we depend upon, we are a committee of council, we depend upon council to let us know if there are things that they need for us to track. We also keep busy with some other things. We analyze the ALA financial situation vis-a-vis its alignment with the strategic plan and the association priorities and trends. And sometimes we do we examine the status quo of existing situations and ask for an analysis or a fresh look. And we've done that a couple times this year. The first one that comes to mind is the Spectrum Scholar Program. We did a thorough analysis there and found that we could be making some changes in accounting and doing things a little more efficiently. And we also, in that analysis, found the additional funds to allow us to increase our scholarship awardees by 10 awards for each of the next 3 years. So instead of awarding 50 scholarships over the next 3 years, we'll be able to award 60 scholarships. So sometimes these analyses prove more fruitful than we had even anticipated. Another analysis that we have been pursuing is looking at how roundtables expenditures and the expenses for roundtables are accounted. And that has led to a robust conversation about the importance of roundtables to the association. The roundtables have evolved historically in a unique way, and it's good to stop sometimes and look at where we are as an association vis-a-vis accounting and attributing expenses. Another area is in another effort that we put forward and has been very fruitful is in looking at the loan that we took out in 2012, and I want to draw to your attention, there's a typo in the written report. I think that loan in the written report says it was taken out in 2008, but in fact, the loan was taken in 2012, and due to staff being very astute and helping us to do some negotiations, we've been able to refinance that loan at a great savings to us over time. The Planning and Budget Assembly is another important gathering, and BARC watches it and participates in it. It helps us to be sure that the strategic plan and the money of the association are aligned. And the agenda for tomorrow's PBA will be focusing on the new strategic plan and the steps that are already being taken to achieve those the goals of the strategic plan. It's going to be a very, I think, a very interesting conversation. And the meeting immediately following planning and budget tomorrow will be with the division leaderships and BARC, and the focus of that meeting will be on how the association is improving its information technology infrastructure. In fact, for fiscal 16, we're allocating an investment of $250,000 above the regular allocation for information technology to improve that infrastructure. And I want to end here with an emphasis on the role of BARC as educator, if you will. Our role is to inform our membership about the budget and the financial situation in the association, but also to help inform people who are member leaders and have direct responsibilities in their units for how to manage their own finances within the unit. We have taken a number of steps in recent years to improve this effort. And one of the things that we have been offering in the past is an open forum meeting on Friday afternoon of midwinter meeting. But because of the things, the webinars and the tutorials that we've been offering, we found that attendance at that meeting has decreased markedly in the last few years. So BARC has decided not to continue with that meeting, but instead to continue offering and improving our webinars. We have a new webinar coming out this summer, and it is about planning budgets for pre-conferences and one-time events. We've just published, in February, we published the ALA Financial Handbook. That's there, resides on the ALA Treasurer's page, is there for you to consult whenever you have questions or would like to clarify a point. Their resources are right there in the handbook. But I also want to emphasize that you have a treasure trove of people who can help you as well if you're a member leader and or even have any questions, whether you're responsible for a fiscal situation in a unit or not. If you have questions, please don't hesitate to contact one of us. And, of course, the treasurer's page is there 24/7 for you to consult. So this concludes my report. I want to close with a note of gratitude to all of you and the many thousands of people who are not here, who are members of ALA, for the time that you give to the profession, to the association, the talent, and the money that you contribute in many different forms. So I thank you. I also want to thank Keith Michael Fields and Mary Geekus for their undying support and vigilance, and also the staff of the finance office. And I want to, in particular, welcome our new Chief Financial Officer, Mark Leon, who joined us on June 1. And Mark is, thank you, Mark, for standing. Right. Mark has proven himself to be a quick study, and this is what we could call baptism by fire, throwing him into the annual conference in his first month of employment. Thank you very much, everyone for your support.
Thank you, Pat. Are there any questions for Ms. Wan? Microphone 4.
Jennifer Gallant, Roundtable Counselor. Quick question for you. Would you be able to elaborate a little bit about the robust discussion you had about the Roundtable finances?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. The discussion has come up because, of, as I say, within BARC, we often look at things we do on a routine basis and have done for many years. And the roundtables we've noticed have increased in numbers. It's pretty easy to become a roundtable. We now have 20 roundtables, and they, for the most part, are flourishing. They are pursuing very, very interesting functions in ways that are critical to the profession. And so we wanted to be sure if we are accounting for the support of them in appropriate ways. And we've just, it's a topic that's on our radar screen. We haven't taken any action. And I suspect that it may continue to be discussed. It's hard to know.
Microphone 4.
Sorry. Will the roundtables be informed of some of these discussions, or if there's any action that'll be taken?
I'm sure if there's any action,
they will.
Right now there's, you know, there's no effect.
Right, because we hadn't heard anything about any discussions.
Right.
Thank you. Hearing no further questions.
Okay, I would just like to tell you that this is the last report from BARC that I will give to you. I am closing now 4 years of service on BARC and 2 years as your chair. It has been extremely educational and gratifying for me personally to serve in this capacity for the association. I'm pleased that I'll have an opportunity to continue serving as an endowment trustee beginning July 1. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Pat. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 13.2 and call upon ALA Treasurer Mario M. Gonzalez to present his report.
Thank you, Madam President. Good afternoon, fellow councilors, executive board members, and members of the association, as well as staff. I present to you this afternoon the 2016 preliminary budget, which has been reviewed by BARC and the ALA Executive Committee at our spring meeting this year. This budget is different than others because we are applying the budget to be aligned with the strategic directions as well as the programmatic priorities. So I'm here to talk about money, not as Joel Gray in Cabaret, but this is real money that helps us do all the great work that we do here in the association. The programmatic priorities, which you all approved in January at a midwinter meeting, are the advocacy for libraries in the profession, diversity, equitable access to information on library services, education and lifelong learning, literacy, organizational excellence, intellectual freedom, and transforming libraries. The strategic directions, which you have seen in many different contexts throughout the conference and even before coming to conference, are advocacy, which is advocating for the public value of librarians, libraries, and information services. The second is professional and leadership development, which is to promote professional leadership development of librarians and library workers, which is essential to a high-quality professional experience and the future of libraries and information services. And lastly, information policy, which is for us to focus at every level on a diverse set of policy areas that include intellectual freedom, privacy, civil liberties, telecommunication, funding for education, research programs, funding for libraries, copyright and licensing, government information and literacy. These are the highlights that drove the numbers for the fiscal 2016 budget. In 2016, we're going to have the midwinter meeting in Boston and the annual conference in Orlando, and PLA and YALSA, which each have their national conferences in Denver for PLA and in Columbus for YALSA. It is also a spend down year for ACRL for their conference in fiscal year 2017, which means they're going to have expenses to incur for a conference that will not receive revenues until the 17 fiscal year budget. The total ALA budget, and I will talk about this later on, is $50.7 million, which is about an increase of $1.2 million or 2% over the fiscal year of 2015. The general fund budget of $29.4 million is essentially flat and leveled at less than half of 1%. Less than 2015. As Pat mentioned before, we're putting $250,000 into a technology initiative. We are also have included a 2% salary increase for ALA staff, and this is where I want to hear some applause. They're well deserved an increase for a very hardworking and capable staff. It also includes funds for the initiatives of the President-elect Sari Feldman, who will be highlighting public awareness campaign. In order to provide the directions for the strategic directions, they're going to be the departments that would lead each of these three strategic directions that I mentioned before. And staff and us resources will be reallocated and realigned to be able to fit into those capacities. As Keith Michael Fields mentioned before, we anticipate about 2,100 new members, organizational members, through the cooperation and agreement we have with United for Libraries. And I see this number growing exponentially in the next fiscal year. Some strategies that will allow us to make this happen include assessment and evaluation, governance and committee structures as staffing that will be changed, communications, PR, and marketing, revenue streams and fundraising, division engagement, technology infrastructure, publishing and conferences, member involvement and engagement, and partnership with outside associations. The key initiatives for the 2016 budget is coordinating each of the strategic initiatives that will be assumed by a designated department. For example, the Communications and Member Relations Department will become the Advocacy and Member Relations Department. Increase support for the Office of Library Advocacy to increase advocacy support for libraries and librarians. A new public awareness office with a director that will lead the advocacy campaign. Chapter relations will use Engage advocacy software by ALA chapters. ITT and publishing will implement a new web-based e-commerce module, which will also support e-learning. The annual number of Spectrum scholarships will increase from 50 to 60, as Pat one mentioned before, for each of the next 3 years, beginning with the 2016 budget. PLA will continue to work on the development of public library impact measures with the support from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The Office of Government Relations has been nearly completely rebuilt and restructured with new hires and staff to strengthen its capacity as it relates to information policy. ASL will significantly increase its presence at the state level, and we're going to have increased support for the Center for the Future of Libraries. So here are the numbers for total ALA. The budget proposed is $50,676,067 for total ALA, which is a 2% increase from the 2015 budget. And here there is a designation of where these monies are coming from. The expenses. Are $50,726,004, which is just slightly under 2% less than the 2015 budget. You will see that the expenses and the revenue are not equal. They are not equal in the total ALA. They are equal in the general fund. So in the general fund, the proposed budget for revenues is $29,363,000, which, as I mentioned before, is just slightly less than half of 1%, $944. And then $29,363,444 are the projected expenses. How we got to those numbers are identified here. Everything from dues to conferences, grants and awards, advertising, publishing, sales. As well as a description of the expenses. The vision revenue and expenses are also not equal because, as I mentioned before, ACRL has a fiscal year 16 spend down of approximately $634,000, which is what driving that negative $784,000. Roundtable budgets are going to end up with a net revenue of $678,000, $572,000 for 2016. I'd like to guide you to the treasurer's page when you have a chance. It has shut up 5 pages from where it used to be, so now it's at the very beginning in about ALA along with the ALA president's page there. So please refer to that. It has further information on the report I presented to you. And in closing, I want to also thank Keith Michael Fields and Mary Geekes for always helping me navigate through the budget on an ALA-wide approach. And again, I give my welcome and appreciation to Mark Leon. Please, Mark, stand up again. You deserve another round of applause. I was very proud to say that I was on the search committee to hire Mark, so I'm glad that he's here with us. And along with that, I want to thank Keith Brown and Brad Ginny and Denise Moritz and Latasha Bryant and Joanne Lee for all of the help that they do to make my job easier and get us through the financial process. I will be back here with you at the podium on Tuesday to present to you the budgetary ceilings. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Gonzalez? Microphone number 5.
Mario, do I have to identify myself here? Okay. Yes. Patty Wong, chapter counselor for California. Mario, can you talk to me a little bit if the budget includes any additional staffing for the Office for Diversity and OLOS? As we continue to have some increased spectrum scholars, I think that's a wonderful idea. But we continue to have a lot of work in that in that land, and the commitment continues. So,
thank you, Patty. I remember that at midwinter, I believe I see her. Oh no, she's still sitting down. Councillor Comito asked about the funds that are put into diversity, and I remember that question. And we talked about it at FNA. So there is an Office of Diversity that has roughly $420,000 in it. In addition to that, there's another $220,000 for the Spectrum Scholarship. And now we are taking money from the Spectrum Scholarship to cover the cost of events for the scholars, but also for managing that scholarship. So as far as additional staff and adding the numbers, I'm going to leave that to Keith, who manages the staff. If you
about a half-time person.
Yeah. Well, he says about a half-time person.
An additional half-time person?
Correct, yeah.
And do you have an idea of what level of classification that might be?
At the program officer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. Thank
Did
you.
Did you hear that? The program officer
program
level.
Officer. Okay.
Thank you, Pat.
Microphone 5.
Linda Williams, Counselor at Large. Excuse me. Maria, I'd just like to offer a friendly correction report. On page 5, YALS is not having their national conference in Columbus, AASL.
I am so sorry. I apologize. Thank you for saying that.
Sure.
Okay.
Microphone 6.
Stand corrected.
Ed Sanchez,
Counselor at Large. Mario, thank you for that Treasurer's report. Would you be willing to elaborate on the impact a 17.7% decrease will have on the operating budget of the general fund? That was on the page, general fund budgeted expenses 2016 versus 2015.
We are always looking to see how we can align the budget with the revenue that we predict we're going to get. And with the general fund, the budget has to be, they have to align the expenses and the revenue. So we are anticipating a less revenue, and as I mentioned before, it's a 2016 midwinter meeting, and it's a 2016 annual conference, which we believe will generate less revenues than the two conferences we've had this year. So in terms of operating, the 17.7 comes into that. Keith would like to add something?
I do apologize. There's another factor, because as you notice, the budget is level from year to year, and in fact, we do have some clearly some additional investments. One of the things that's happening within the budget is that the expenses are being reduced because we're carrying what's known as amortization, and that's associated with RDA and with Neil Schumann. It's an accounting mechanism that reflects on the operating budget as an expense, and we are coming out of the tail end of our RDA several million dollars in investments, which is essentially similar to depreciation, and it's being written off the books. And that's actually then freeing up funds which can be used for programmatic support.
And you'll see that decreased as years go out.
Okay. Thank you.
Microphone number 4.
Hattie Dudley, Arkansas Chapter Counselor. Sorry. I'm going to piggyback on Ms. Patty Wong because I had a question about the Office for Library Advocacy and the increased support that's going there. And I believe that was Lauren Comito's concern at Midwinter. Can you tell us what that increased staff support will look like? Or is it staff support, or is it something else for the Library Advocacy Office? Well, and I have a second question as well.
Okay. As I mentioned before, the Library Advocacy Office is going to look at advocacy as one of the directions, and it will have a director along with the Public Awareness Office. Keith, did you want to talk about personnel issues?
What we have done is to include an additional $50,000 in the Office for Library Advocacy budget for 16. One of the things that we try and do is to provide managers with the greatest amount of flexibility in terms of how resources are allocated. So at this point, I know that Marcy Marola, and who's the director of the office, and Kathleen Bourdon are looking at what's the best way. So, for instance, an example might be to bring a staff member on board. Alternatively, you might bring a half-time person on board and then use some of the other money for essentially a professional services contract to bring in expertise or people that can support programs. So that's in the process of, at this point, being discussed. And the decision, I want to be in the hands of the manager that can make sure those funds are used most effectively.
Very good. Thank you, Keith. May I ask my second question?
Please proceed.
Is the 2% adjustment for staff across the board starting at the first day of the fiscal year, or is it merit-based, performance-based?
It is across the board, and it is for fiscal year 2016, which, as Pat mentioned, begins in September.
Okay, thank you.
Microphone 3.
Bob Holly, IFRT Counselor. I'm asking this question because it could potentially have great budget consequences. Can either you or Keith talk about the security of the ALA files and contractor files against hacking? Because if files get hacked, that's a significant expense.
I know that we're putting more money into ITT, and we're looking at more updated software, but again, I'm going to turn it over to Keith, who has the details on that.
I just ran into Councillor Margolis prior to this meeting, and as those of you with good memories will recall, he had asked that question at the last conference. We brought some information together because we do a lot of work in terms of intrusion detection. We're constantly being attacked and probed, as any large website is. We're constantly updating. We're going through various exercises to test our vulnerabilities. So that's one dimension. The second dimension is that we do not retain Social Security information. We do not retain credit card information. Anything that is utilized is encrypted and then only maintained for the absolute amount of time that's required in order to clear the transaction. So I would like to say that we're as hack-proof as, let's say, the U.S. government database. So all I can say is that Mary Geekus and Sherry Vaniak, who's head of ITTS, we do put a lot of energy. We do regular security audits. We have had some intrusions. We've caught them early on. It's a constant battle, and I think it's, you know, you probably have some appreciation for that. I will follow up then with the promised report just to give you a little bit more sense in some of the broad range of activities that we engage in. But I think that both in terms of what's being retained and then how we deal with the possibility of intrusions are the two halves.
Have you had any staff training? Because that's one of the more common ways that hackers get into systems with phishing.
Right. And that's one of the things I will have to tell you that the auditor, over the last, let's say, 4 years, the audit has increasingly focused on technology controls. So, in fact, we work with the auditor, and they always have recommendations to strengthen those each year so that things like authorizations, minimal authorizations, a constant review of authorizations, updating of authorizations. So there's a lot of attention paid to that. And a lot of that comes through as part of the audit process, the IT component of the audit.
Thank you.
Microphone number 3.
Barbara Stripling, immediate past president. I think I just don't understand, but on page 14, it looks to me like you added the revenues and expenses to be net revenues rather than subtracted.
In the 2016 proposed.
In both columns, 2015 and 2016, it seems to me like net revenues ought to be the difference.
You're absolutely correct, Barbara.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hearing no further questions, thank you, Mario, for your report.
Thank you very much.
At the 1985 midwinter meeting, Council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to the Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council document number 16.1 and call upon Rodney Hershberger, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present his report. Good afternoon, Rod.
Thank you, Courtney. And congratulations on a great year as president. And we have also up here the grandmother of the latest greatest grandchild ever born, Joanne Kemp. And she has pictures. Can you believe it? I'm only going to do some highlights on this because I've shown some of these things to you before, but first page or two comes from our investment policy statement, the mission of the endowment fund. Our primary objective is to grow the endowment and make the funds some of the income available to the association and the divisions who have a stake in them. But on exhibit two, on the right-hand side of the bullets, I want to tell you that the second one down specifies the asset allocation policy for the portfolio's assets. That's evolved over time as the endowment has grown and there have been different kinds of investments available for us to consider. Real assets, for instance, alternatives and so forth. We're not big into those, but that has grown. And the trustees for the last couple of years have paid more attention to asset allocation than we have focusing on individual managers. That doesn't mean we don't monitor their performance, and our investment advisor does, but that seems to be a strategy that serves most organizations well, is to concentrate on the big, broad asset allocations. And because of the continually low interest rates, it's pretty hard to make money in fixed income. So we're maxed to our investment policy in equities and sliding kind of along at the minimums on fixed income. And Exhibit 3 shows some of the uses for the income and growth of the endowment, Spectrum scholarships, medals, awards, speakers, and so forth, all these very important things in the association's broader mission. Exhibit 4, it's been a long bull market. I think there's some easiness that's about to end. I hope not, because we've ridden it very well. I continue to want to remind you that we've always been conservative in our approach, and that served us well in 2008, because when many investors lost half their income, we were only down about a quarter. So we've recovered very well from that time. And I think being cautious and conservative and not chasing the latest fad and trend has served us well, and we'll continue to do that. But we just want to show you that we're aware of some of these market risks that we read in the paper and follow. We're pretty sure the Fed's going to increase interest rates sometime. My guess is it'll be after Labor Day, because the traders all take their holidays in August and go to the Hamptons and spend all the money they make off us. But they'll be back right after Labor Day to digest that. And we've talked some about that, but we think the broader markets have probably already discounted that because it's been in discussion for such a long period of time. Exhibit 5 shows the market value and return at the end of May. We're keeping up with the market. You'll see on the next page we're doing a little better than the S&P. Some of the international indexes show greater increase when we get to a couple of slides in, but they were down quite a bit the last couple of years too. So we're a little over $41 million, or about $41 million. Exhibit 6 just shows each month by month here. And Exhibit 7 are some of these other indexes that that we look at for comparison. Number 8 shows where the trustees have invested the endowment, these several managers. We've been liquidating the endowment fund, which is kind of in the middle there. That should be completed fairly soon. That was a fund of hedge funds, and it just didn't go too well. We got in at a time when hedge funds were kind of going down, so we've been getting out of that as quickly as their policies allow. The second one on that list, Merrill Lynch Personal Advisor, the slide you're looking at now shows there are 11 different managers within that that we put that in. So that's kind of under a Merrill Lynch umbrella that we put that out there. Number 10, the board added the seventh trustee at its spring meeting. You might recall that we went through the fairly long process of adding two trustees, a bylaw change a few years ago, and the board had added one, and then it added another one, and I'll go over that in a moment. But we're out to full complement of trustees now. And as it says here, a few years ago, I proposed we have a meeting in New York every year, which we've done for 3 or 4 years now, because the talent pool there is greater than anywhere in the world. And we've been very fortunate to get some high-level principals and participants at some big investment firms who have shared with us some of the things that they have to offer that you and I might not know about as individual investors. We haven't made any big sea changes because of that, but it's been very enlightening to us to see what's available as the endowment continues to grow. And on the final page, you'll see we always like to thank Keith Brown for his work. And we have a list of the trustees who will take office after this conference. Kate Nevins is ending her term, and she's retired from her position and retired from the trustees. And Brian Schottlander and Pat Wan are going to be new trustees. But unfortunately for you, unlike Pat, I'm not going away. I'll be here for 3 more years. So you'll have to put up with me for that. So that concludes my report, and thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hershberger? Seeing as there are none, thank you,
and we'll
see you for the next 3 years. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 14.1, ALA Task Force on Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Report, and call upon Martin Gardner, co-chair, to present the update report. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Courtney. Thank you for inviting us to provide an update on the activities of the Task Force for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. We are grateful for the opportunity to share this information with you. As you know, the task force was charged in the spring of 2014, in large part in response to the grave concerns about ALA hosting its annual conference in 2016 in Orlando, and also to help develop ways in which the association can demonstrate its commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion. While the first 6 months of the task force activities were focused on defining our terminology, discerning our tasks, and developing trust, the next 6 months have been focused on gathering input from our professional community through a variety of venues. We submitted a written report, and I will not repeat the contents of the report, but I will highlight a few accomplishments to date, as well as the task force's first recommendations. With over 1,400 respondents answering the majority of questions, the task force's first survey focused on how respondents perceive the climate at ALA conferences and events. Our survey subgroup has been diligently analyzing the results to see if different demographic groups have more concerns about the association's climates, and our results will be posted shortly on our Connect page. Our second survey, focused on your potential plans for attending the Orlando conference, launches today. You can be the first to take it. There's no prize, but we encourage you to see who gets number one. We do encourage you to take the survey and to share it with your colleagues, both within LA, within ALA, and in the larger profession. The survey will remain open for 3 weeks. Given the importance of providing venues for people to speak openly and honestly about the issues related to equity, diversity, and inclusion, we have devoted much of our time to listening to what you have to say. In addition to the surveys and our midwinter Harwood-style conversation, we have hosted listening sessions at the Reforma and American Theological Library Association National Conferences, with another one planned for the National Conference of African American Librarians. You also have a chance to participate in an open listening session this Sunday at 2:30 to 4 p.m. at the Hilton San Francisco Union Square in Plaza B. Your input is vital to our work, and I encourage you to add your voice to the hundreds from whom we have already heard. To facilitate attendance at this listening session, we will have a zip line set up from the Marriott Marquis to the Hilton. If you donate to the endowment, we'll have a helicopter ride for you instead. While our final recommendations aren't due for another year, we do have two initial recommendations for the association's consideration. Though they are listed in our report, they are worth repeating in this venue. Number one, the ALA Executive Board, Council, or appropriate body should direct the Policy Monitoring Committee to collect all ALA discrimination policies into one document in order to point vendors and others with whom ALA does business to a single policy related to equity, diversity, and inclusion. Number two, ALA should include language in all future contracts that assures all vendors, conference sites, and others with whom the association does business have policies that complement ours. The task force members have generated and collected lots of great ideas, and we'll have to determine which ones are most feasible and which will achieve the results we need. Now is the time to shift gears from information gathering to active planning for how our association can embrace the principles of equity, diversity, and inclusion in all that we do, and to ensure that these efforts are sustainable for the long term. We will, of course, continue to keep you updated on our activities through our reports, and you may also follow our activities on our ALA Connect space. I would like to publicly acknowledge the wonderful work of my co-chair, Trevor Dawes, and all the members of the task force whose names are listed in the report. I'd like to offer a special word of thanks to Gwendolyn Prelwitz, our intrepid staff liaison who has had to carry an increased workload after the departure of the previous director of the Office for Diversity and the Office for Outreach and Literacy Services. It is such a pleasure for me to work with a dedicated and committed group. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Garner? Seeing as there are none, thank you, Martin, for your report.
Thank you.
I will now call upon Keith Fields for announcements. Keith?
Thank you, Courtney. I do have a couple of lengthier announcements, so my apologies. But I will begin by announcing the attendance. As of the end of the day yesterday, we had 10,746 registrants and 11,051 exhibit only, complimentary, and exhibitors for a grand total of 21,797. And that compares with 18,605 last year in Las Vegas. Based on Council's actions at the 2014 annual conference, we're now not printing, as many documents as we have in the past. All documents will be posted to the Council page on the ALA Connect site throughout the annual conference. Lois Ann will be sending an email to the Council list alerting you when documents have been posted. So be sure to check your emails prior to coming to each Council meeting for documents that may have arrived. As internet connectivity can be temperamental, we would strongly recommend downloading Council documents to your desktop or thumb drive prior to coming to each Council meeting, rather than relying solely on accessing them through ALA Connect during the meeting. For those of you who expressed a need for paper documents, they will be available for you at the Council document pickup table in this room. We'll still be providing document portfolios for you to store any other documents you may collect during the annual conference. And please, as always, be aware that although this room is a secure room, other meetings are also being held in here. You should not leave computers or other valuables at your place or inside your portfolio. The ALA membership meeting will be held in this room immediately following this meeting, so that we do ask that you please return your document portfolios to their storage boxes at the Council document pickup tables located at the back of this room at the adjournment of this meeting. And then last but not least, just to remind you again that the San Francisco Pride Parade was going to take place tomorrow. The parade route runs down Market Street, thus Market Street will be closed from approximately 6 a.m. until 6 p.m. tomorrow. The Convention Center and the Marriott Marquis are located on the south side of Market Street. All other hotels are on the north side. The challenge is that no one is allowed to cross Market Street during this period, even if there are breaks in the parade. So there will be no getting across Market Street at all. And again, this is before the parade kicks off. Council One starts at 8:30 a.m. So if you're staying at a hotel other than the Marriott Marquis, you'll have to need to plan accordingly. Options are to walk around the parade route, which is down to the Embarcadero in one direction, or the public library in the other.
to cut through the BART stations, and my only understanding is that we have heard that in the past those can become extremely crowded and the police have been known to restrict access, so it can take a while to get through, perhaps not at 8:30, but certainly as the day goes on, or take the shuttle buses, and they will go around, and they'll begin running an hour early at 6 a.m. Tomorrow, which is 1 hour earlier than normal. So this is an exciting time to be in San Francisco, but tomorrow is going to be a challenging day. So look forward to seeing everyone.
Thank you, Keith. The membership meeting will begin at 4:30 as scheduled. And so at this time, the ALA Council Executive Board membership session now stands adjourned. We will reconvene for the membership meeting in about 13 minutes. Thank you.